aquatic supplies. But my clothes? Not required, sir. Ceremonial attire is being tailored to your measurements as we speak.
Ula had never seen this side of the Republic administration at work. It was surprisingly and irritatingly efficient.
I have a pet Vorpak, he said, improvising wildly. If I leave it alone, it'll die. Not to worry, sir. Provide us with your key and I'll have it cared for. No, that's not necessary.
Ula ran a hand through his hair. Both packing a bag and his imaginary pet were covers for his real intention. He wanted to send a message from his apartment to his Imperial masters, informing them of this sudden development. Otherwise, they might worry at his silence. Luckily, he had prepared for every contingency. Pulling his comlink out of his pocket, he said,
I'll call a neighbor. She'll look after it. Give me a moment.
He walked a short distance from Patanin and placed a quick call. The neighbor was imaginary, too, but the number was real. It led to an automated message service that was regularly checked by Watcher 3's network of agents on Coruscant. After the tone, he recorded his name and ordered two innocuous dishes from a non-existent menu. The name of the first dish contained 9 syllables, the second 13, and those numbers allowed Ula's real message to be decoded from stock phrases every Imperial operative knew by heart. He'd experienced an unplanned interruption and would re-establish contact as soon as possible. At least via the voice drop, his abbreviated message would get through. Who knew when he would find an opportunity to send another? That thought triggered a whole new wave of trepidation. Bad enough to be in the spotlight, but to be completely cut off from his chain of command was even worse. He could feel his hands beginning to tremble, and to hide that, he stuffed them with his comlink into his pockets.
All right,
he said, turning back to the attentive Sergeant Patanin and beaming the brightest smile he could manage.
I'm all yours.
Smoothly falling into formation around him, they marched him off to be outfitted for his new role. Part 2. Hutta. Chapter 7. The glorious jewel of the Y-tube system rose like a bloated corpse from the bottomless sea of space. Shigar squinted out at it, glad for the first time that they hadn't found more opulent transport. The passenger lounge of the Red Silk Chances was filthy, and its viewports barely counted as translucent, but the squalor matched the view. Hutta looked every bit as foul as its reputation suggested. Moldy green and brown like a fruit left to ripen too long, bursting with rot from within. Lorin sat next to him, and their shoulders jostled together every time the freighter rattled beneath them. Her face was hidden by the helmet of her increasingly non-regulation armor, but he could tell from the straightness of her spine that she was paying close attention to everyone around them. The droids and lowlifes taking the trip with them warranted it. Thus far, there had been 2 knife fights, several games of rigged Jajarik, numerous arguments over the outcome of the latest great hunt, and a vigorous sing-along in a dialect Shigar had never heard before that had felt as though it might last forever. Seeking to calm his nerves, he closed his eyes and concentrated on an oddly shaped shard of plastoid in his right hand that he had picked up in the streets of Coruscant as they had waited to board their shuttle. Nothing about it was familiar, so there was no way his conscious mind could guess its origins or purpose. Determining either or both of those was where his psychometric ability was.